Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today we have another edition of our brewery tour through Fresno and Clovis. And today we are going to meet Dustin Hale and Matt Denson, the founders of Burning Sun Brewing Company right on Clovis Avenue in Clovis, California. I really enjoyed talking with them. One small disclaimer, we recorded this interview about 6 weeks ago. Just wanted to put that out there for future events that are described at the end of the conversation. Let's go meet Dustin and Matt, and Baker will take us there.
Blessed to infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best!
Matt and Dustin, where do you guys like to eat in Fresno or Clovis?
I like steaks, preferably either the backyard of my house, or I really like to go to 13 Prime.
Okay, what's your cut? What do you order?
I'm a lean type of guy, so I like filet.
Okay. I feel like that's how people start out. Like they start out with a fatty ribeye, and then eventually they move to the lean. Was that kind of your process, or you always been a lean guy?
I've always been lean. Fat and me just don't mix. The chewiness, the gagginess, it's just not there. But I do know that the flavor you get from fat, there's nothing like it. But yeah, chewing on it for me is just not there.
What about you, Matt? Where do you like to eat?
I tend to be more of a tacos and pizza type of person. So I like BC's pizza out here in Clovis, Carlitas for tacos, burritos out here in Clovis as well. Tend to always veer towards those. They're easy, they're quick. With BC's, I can always get a good beer there as well. As well as being a brewer, I'm a fan of beer. I like to try different beers, and BC's tends to have a tap lineup that I don't usually find at every other spot here in Clovis or Fresno.
I have a close friend who is constantly harassing me that I haven't been to BC's. What do you like about the pizza there?
Oh, the pizzas is always good. The crust is good. The toppings are plentiful on them. It goes along good with beer. So that's the draw there. Any brewery that I go to, if they have pizza, I'm always trying that because it's a good filler when you're having a couple pints.
That is the best pairing. We're going to talk about a lot of brewery-related topics here, but I want to start with kind of your origin stories and background. Can you tell me and give me a visual description of the homebrew setup in Matt's garage?
Sure. So had a three-car garage. In the third car area, we'd set up three kettles, two 30-gallon kettles, one 20-gallon mash tun. We would brew on that to make our wort. Then next to that, we had a glycol chiller tied into a small half-barrel unit tank so we could control the temperature on our fermentations. And other than that, that was our main setup. We had a control panel so we could control the temperatures on our mash, our boil kettle, our hot liquor tank. So that was nice to have. So we had a display that would show us temperatures, and we'd have PIDs or our control units or sensors that would go into the kettles to show the temperature.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's fairly simple design, and took up a little bit of space. So obviously we weren't parking any cars in there, but it was my area to set up for brewing, and it worked out well.
I don't think it started out that nice. We started with the glass carboy till those broke.
Yep.
And then the buckets. Yeah. So we just progressed as we felt like the beer got better, and we tried to be a little more thorough with the process. But we started out with a simple homebrew kit like everybody else, and felt like every year we were progressing in bigger batches and quality control. So it was fun.
Like a lot of like famous Silicon Valley startups, they all begin in garages before they take off. I'm curious for you guys, and I've asked each of my kind of brewery guests this question, you could probably answer this question with "it depends," and that'd be a perfectly valid answer. But I'm going to push you a little bit. What are the indicators that you are moving from a hobby to a business? What for you guys were those indicators?
For me, I wanted to progress as a brewer. I really enjoy the process. I love creating recipes. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do that home brewing. I wasn't going to progress as much as I would I'd like to. So I took the direction of working in a brewery and trying to get up on the brew stand, trying to get in the cellar, trying to get the reps in order to get better at the process, but also working on recipe design, tweaking things here and there with whenever I was given the opportunity to add my own input. And it really came down to, okay, do I want to continue to have this as a hobby, or do I want to make be make this a commercial professional endeavor? And so it was at a certain point around 2017-ish that I decided it was time to get to work in a brewery and start making my own way on the professional side.
On reading your guys' story, you mentioned that you had everything ready to go around COVID time, and then COVID put a halt to the plans. In hindsight, do you view that as a benefit for your long-term abilities and growth as a business?
I hope so. At the time, we had explored starting Burning Sun, and we created our LLC and our business, and we're like, okay, we still hadn't figured, we still hadn't tied down a location. Mm-hmm. So we were still very much in the early stages of discovering how we're going to put this together. And I think at the time, once COVID hit, it gave us time to step back and say, okay, what kind of business plan do we want to do with this? I think our initial endeavor into looking for spots maybe were a bit more than we could bite off at the time. I think once COVID passed, we found the opportunity to get started with a very small space. It really just gave us, from a capital perspective, we could get started without having to take on additional investors and start off basically from ground zero and grow organically from there.
Okay. What advice would you give to someone who's a home brewer that's listening, that's considering opening up a shop, but is not sure if they're ready? Are there things that were invisible to you before you opened up that now are visible that would be informative for a home brewer to understand before they go into business?
I think there's a couple things. From a home brewer's perspective, commercial equipment is much different. There's a different process involved. It's obviously bigger amount of liquid that you're moving around from vessel to vessel. The brew houses are laid out differently than home brewing. But the other side is the business side. Understanding from a business perspective, what are you trying to accomplish with this business? What are your expectations within a certain time frame of what your success metrics look like? I think it's understanding how to brew and knowing that side of it, but it's also understanding what you're trying to accomplish from a business perspective.
Okay.
I think from my point of view is there's a lot of time that is out there. And so if you got family and kids and work, other details, like there's a lot of contributing factors, and there's also a lot of competing events. But cash is obviously another big, you don't realize it. And that's why I feel we're fortunate to where we're at now at the facility we are on Railroad and Barstow. It being a previous brewery, it had the drains, it had the glycol, some cold box stuff. Already everything was in place. And so for us to go from our little warehouse of no air conditioning, no hot water, to wash anything, we had to boil our own water. It was just to get warm water. But it's time, it's patience. And it's not just brewing beer and pouring it off the tab. It's going out and soliciting customers. It's sales. It's distribution. And it seems simple when you're at home and you're making a little 5-10 gallon batch. And I felt that there's a lot of friends were pushing us. Oh, you guys need to do this. The beer is great. The beer is good. And so what does that really mean? And so now coming, we're going on 3 years as a company. We've just passed our 1 year at the tap room here in Clovis. And so we've seen our business grow organically, and there's ups and downs every month. And so depending on if it's 115 outside, some people don't want to come outside, and PG&E rates are high. So those are your little slower months. And so you got to think a little bit ahead of where you're going to be. And so on the good months, you're able to put some stuff away for the lean months. And it's not just as simple as a homebrew batch and then let's just jump in and do this. There's a lot to it, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of communication. And ultimately at the end of the day, it's partnerships. It is a lot of fun. And so when you see the process, for me, that's where the fun comes in, is the relationships and how you can take a sack of grain, some hops, and create beer.
I saw this brewery in Phoenix, maybe you guys should employ this, that every summer they blow up kiddie pools out in front and people come and sit in a kiddie pool with their beer. So I don't know if there's some weird OSHA violations there or something, or I don't know, who knows, but yeah, there's probably ways to get them out in the 115.
It takes being creative there with some of the promotions in order to make that happen.
Yeah. Let's nerd out on beer for a little bit. This is my favorite part of the conversation. What for you guys should be the texture of a hazy IPA in your mouth? What's the texture? Are we closer to cream? Are we closer to a juice, like a thick juice? Like, how would you describe it?
I consider it full. I want a full mouth feel. So when I think of full mouth feel, I think of a higher finishing gravity in the beer. And to accomplish that is through a combination of mash temperatures, adjuncts added to the beer. But for a hazy IPA, I think fullness in the mouth feel is what I'm looking for, as opposed to maybe creamy, juicy, like orange juice or something like that. Like, that's what I aim for in my beers.
Yeah. Do you guys think we've peaked in the hazy world, or you think that we're still plateaued there?
I get asked that, but from our sales, hazy is still a top seller. I see a little bit more traction with the West Coast. We are selling more units of West Coast, but hazy is still a big seller for us.
I find the revenge of the West Coast.
No, I find that hazies are like a gateway beer. And I have a handful of friends, and there's people that'll come into the tap room and they're like, well, I'm not really into the craft beer thing yet. And so I always try to challenge them, like, hey, try this. If you don't like it, then I'll drink it. And so I'll give a little taster of the hazy. And I feel that the way that our beers come across, you don't get that acidic cringe in your mouth, or you don't get the bitterness punch. And so I feel like it is a gateway to where people go, okay, I understand the flavors. I get the mouthfeel, the fullness, the softness, the pillowy flavor. And then I see them going, you know what? This is really good. And they order. So I still think it's a good mechanism for people to venture out, because it does have a little of those juicy characters, the citrus, tropical. People tend to like that stuff. And I think it brings people to a place, whether they've had experiences in the beach or Hawaii. But it's a trip to me to see how many people really, I don't like IPAs. I'm like, try this. And they usually come around, and the next thing you know, they're hooked.
If you guys could each take one type of beer to a deserted island, which kind would you take with you? It's got to be an everyday, right? It's got to be an everyday drinker.
I would take a lager. I love light lager, sour beers. That would be my go-to, especially if I'm going to a hot place. I want that cold, crisp, and lightness of a lager style beer.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Pilsner, light lager. It's just easy drinking, whether it's cold outside, hot outside. They're smooth. You can have more than one or two and not feel either bloated or low ABV. Just gives you the ability to crush a few back.
I noticed in your description of your pale ale, you described it as balanced. What does that mean in a pale ale to be balanced?
So I'm looking for the malt as well as a hop character in the beer. I don't want necessarily to have it skewed so far to the hop side of things. If I'm doing that, I'm looking more at the West Coast. But I just also don't want to necessarily have it be skewed to the maltier side. I want to have that balance between the malt and hops in the beer. And I also configure my water profiles and stuff in order to make it seem more balanced as well. But yeah, that's where I'm coming from with recipe design on a pale ale.
It's funny you say pale ale. That's exactly what
you got there. Related, how much is too much fruit in a beer?
Too much fruit from an adjunct perspective, like adding fruit?
Yeah, like an additive perspective. Sometimes you'll get beers that are fruit forward and it's practically fruit juice.
And I think there are some breweries that they do that. That's part of their menu. We don't do that. We do have some beers that are flavored, like our Blood Orange Bliss, where we're using a concentrate for that blood orange flavor. We're not necessarily putting a lot of puree into that beer, or any puree actually. So it's there for the flavor, but it's not there for the consistency that sometimes you'll get with a smoothie sour or something that's packed full of fruit puree.
You're one of the few breweries in town that really pushes the word light as part of your kind of marketing materials for your beer. Can you talk about that and what does that mean for you guys?
I'd say the marketing piece, light, like our American Light Lager, it's a very light, and I coined it as LITE only because it was just something different at the time. Some other breweries were going through some struggles of branding. And so trying to bring home what a true American light lager is what I was shooting for with the light. But with anything with marketing, you got to be open to change. But the light, I feel like it's light, it's airy, there's easy balance of it. And on the American light specifically, I feel like that's where change that verbiage from just normal light beer to light, LITE. Like, I looked at it like light, floating clouds, fluffy, but it wasn't overly. So that's a weird roundabout way of why it's called light.
And looking for something that's approachable. If somebody's walking in, they don't like hoppy beers. They maybe don't want something that's flavored. The American Light Lager is another one of those, same as Dusto's mentioning with that hazy. If somebody's not necessarily into hazy, but try ours. Try this American Light Lager. If you're looking for something more on the simple side of approachable from a craft perspective, that's about as approachable as you get.
The hard part, though, is lagers are hard to make. You can't cover it up with hops. You can't cover it up with flavoring or adjuncts. And so you got to be dialed on it. And it's a very tough beer to perfect. You want to make sure that it's balanced. It doesn't have any off flavors because it comes out. And those lighter beers, very delicate when it comes to beer etiquette and how you critique a beer. Because if it has off flavors, diacetyl or anything like that through the fermentation process, you'll know it. And there's no way to cover it up. And so that's why we really strive to have a handful of light beers, because I do feel that when Matt is brew stand on a light beer, that it shows the amount of effort and quality that we put into our products, because we're not afraid to let these lights shine on their own, because they are very difficult to make. And so when they do come out crisp, clear, you know that you nailed it.
Yeah. And I had a long discussion with Alex from Summer Fox about all the breweries that are rolling out lagers that are actually golden ales, and like to actually do the work to make a lager is not understood by the beer drinking masses, like kind of the behind the scenes. But I want to jump to your Mexican lager next. Okay. Is what would be the less sophisticated cousin of your Mexican lager? If you were to look at the kind of mass market, kind of Mexican beer market, what would be its less sophisticated cousin, if you will?
From a macro perspective, like
So is it closer to Modelo or closer to something in that range?
Probably not as pale as Modelo. I do add a little bit of Munich malt to my Mexican lager to give it a little bit of a malt character. So not necessarily like a Negra Modelo type of beer, but not that dark, but it's more there to add a little bit of complexity and flavor. So maybe an in between a Modelo and Negra Modelo. But yeah, that's what I'm shooting for. I definitely want to have a little bit more character than what you get out of some of the just the straight macro style Mexican lagers.
Yeah, hence my word less sophisticated. For both of you, I want to hear both of you. What is for you the attributes of a good IPA? It's one of those things where through inflation, having so many things that are called IPA, it's almost like I don't even know what the word means anymore. You know what I mean? So for you, if you were setting it out, like this for me are like what a good IPA is, what would you say?
I would say a good IPA is going to be hop forward, depending on if it's West Coast or hazy. If it's West Coast, I do want some of that assertive bitterness, not over the top, but I do want to have that on the back of the beer. I want that bitterness. I also want character with the kettle hops that I add on a West Coast throughout the process there, but it definitely skewed more towards the hop side of things. I do add a little bit of say Vienna malt to a West Coast, just again, same with my Mexican lager. I'm just adding it to add a little bit of character there. Add a little bit of white wheat to provide a little bit of that protein there for and flavor, a little bit of mouthfeel. But again, just a little bit. I'm not going over the top. I want the beer to be very much hop driven, but not necessarily out of balance too. I want it to have some sort of malt backbone to it, but I don't want it to get in the way of my hop character. When I think about hazies. Hazies, it's obviously I'm not adding any kettle hops to that beer because I don't want bitterness from that, but I do want that character from adding the hops to the whirlpool, adding hops to the dry hop. I want that tropical or that fruit character to come out from the beer. And then I'm using my malt bill to obviously create a hazy IPA, but also to just be there to support those hops.
I think for me, I tend to go towards the West Coast. And for me, what I look for is that bright clarity. And I like the diminished bitterness up front. But what I like on the back end is a little bit of that, I don't want to say elevated carbon dioxide level, but a little bit of that crisp, that CO2, where it just pops the hop aroma and flavor profiles. Because that's, I think, where you can really open your senses and get those different flavors. It is a trip to me how everybody has a different palate. And whether they taste a pineapple or you call it a mango or this, it always is fun to talk about, hey, what do you taste out of this beer? And so that's what I look for is the clarity, a little bit more on the CO2 side. So it helps pop in the back and then just helps project some of those senses, which you get from drinking beer.
What are your guys' thoughts on seltzers? They're becoming a big part of the marketplace. I've heard that they're not fun to make, but they also reach a demographic that maybe wants to drink less beer and wants some lower calorie stuff. How do you guys think about those?
I think it's something that our customers ask for. So we do seltzers and we try to keep a couple on the menu. So it is part of our offering. It's not necessarily, again, it's a simplistic thing, making seltzers, but it is something that people want as an alternative to drinking beer. So if we can offer them a seltzer and then maybe here, try this or
try something better.
Better beers. But again, some people are not, they're just not into beer. So it allows spouses on date nights to come in. Maybe one of them doesn't want to drink beer, but the other one does. The seltzers offer that alternative.
I think it's a bridge for wine drinkers. Like, same thing. Mm-hmm. My wife is a wine drinker. She's not a huge beer fan. And a seltzer will help get her halfway to calling it a beer. And then she ends up mixing and matching some of our beers. She'll mix a stout and a vanilla just to change the profile a little bit. It's weird, but it works. And the seltzers, though, give us the ability to experiment a little bit. There's a lot of different varieties of fruit, whether it's puree, artisan. There's flavor profiles. It's kind of like hops. And so that's one of the things that we've been working on is trying to find a balance of okay, what pops. And I think we found one currently that it's selling a lot. It's got great balance. It's a wild berry and a mix of huckleberry and a little bit of vanilla. And it's almost a purplish hue, but it's clear. You don't feel like you're full of sugar at the end. And so that's one of the things that I was striving to do is to, when Matt would make the seltzers, get it to the point where finished so clean that the calorie levels were next to nothing. And some of them actually did ferment so low that you were almost down to like a gravity of water. But the small amounts of fruit additives that we would get would be the only amount of sugar. And trying to, whether it's dry January or, hey, New Year's resolution, we're going to try and cut some beers, but we still want to drink a few drinks. And so try to make it where people felt like they were going to feel like they're going to be able to cut some calories and maybe some alcohol a little bit, but still able to participate with their friends and hang out.
Let's say I tasked you with making a beer that was purely for love. You weren't worried about the economics of it, whether it would sell. You just don't give a shit. You just want to make something that's like a passion for you. What would that beer be for you, Matt, that you would make?
I'd still go back to probably making a lager with the best possible ingredients and maybe using some yeast varieties that I haven't used before. I typically, for my lagers, I'm a 3470 brewer, but there's a lot of different lager yeasts out there to try. And again, using the best possible German malts. I have a Pilsner in the tank right now where there's all German Pilsner malt. Well, in the past, when I made Pilsners, I've used mostly domestic style pills and malt. But and obviously using the best possible noble hops, German noble hops for that beer, whether it's the Hallertau or Saaz or any of those style of hops in that beer. But I'd still gravitate. If it's going to be a beer that I want to make, it's going to be a lager style.
Okay. Well, we're going to jump into my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you. You tell me whether you think they're over or underrated and why. Feel free to pass on any of these. There's a couple controversial ones in here, of course, because it wouldn't be fun otherwise. So the first one, a Shock Top.
Shock Top's obviously overrated at this point. That's again, that's I can't remember the last time I've seen Shock Top. Yeah, somebody.
Yeah, I think it's still out there. I was at a convenience store and I saw it, and I was like, really? "Whoa, blast from the past!"
Yeah, I would say overrated, but I don't even know if it's even rated anymore.
All right, next one, Athletic Brew, the non-alcoholic beer company.
I think a non-alcoholic serves a purpose, especially when Dustin was talking about like dry January and stuff. Non-alc style beers are a percentage of craft beer now. And so, yeah, I think Athletic serves definitely a purpose in the marketplace. It allows people to enjoy a beer, but they're abstaining from alcohol or doing type of dry January. So I think those are probably underrated to some degree.
Okay. Would you guys rather drink a non-alcoholic beer or a hop seltzer?
I would probably drink a non-alc. I've had Sierra Nevada's non-alc, and it's good. I wouldn't take it over a regular beer, but it's doable.
What about you, Dustin? Non-alcoholic beer or a hop seltzer?
I'm going to go with the non-alcoholic beer. I've had a handful of them only because I wanted to try and see what kind of the little buzz was out there about it. And it is cool to see how you can participate in drinking a non-alcoholic beer and not maybe have some health issues that you can't have any alcohol. Maybe there's some liver issues. If you find something that is balanced for everybody and they can still participate, even trying to care for themselves, or maybe they had an issue with too much participation in alcohol, but it still gives them that satisfaction. But yeah, I think it was a hazy one at the golf course several weeks ago. And I was impressed because normally when you think about a beer and it's like, how do they get there? How do they make it where it's not so, when you just try wort that's not fermented, it doesn't have the best flavor. And seeing how they are able to keep it at a low, there's still a bit of alcohol in there, but I just tried it because I wanted to be able to answer probably this question. I never thought it'd come up, but I wanted to try it because sometimes you just don't feel like drinking a beer, whether you're out and about, you got drive or whatever. And so trying to make sure safety is obviously paramount, but yeah, long-winded answer for NA beer.
Perfect. The next one I've asked probably my previous 150 guests the same question, which is, do you think Me and Ed's Pizza is over or underrated?
I think it's overrated.
Okay. Explain.
I've actually been a fan of Me and Ed's in the past. I just don't think it has it's not as robust as it used to be to me from a topping and a crust perspective. It has its uniqueness to it. But
think about where we came from though. Pizza Factory is tough to beat all around.
Yeah.
Do you agree with his answer, Dustin?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, the crust, the sauce is a little rough for me, but we grew up in Oakhurst and we went to high school and there was a place called Danny's and now is known as the Pizza Factory. That was the original Pizza Factory and all of that corporation. And so we were spoiled. Their pizza, even to this day, is absolutely unbelievable. When you can hold up that pizza and the grease just drips off, you know you got something. But yeah, so I struggle with the Me and Ed's.
Okay, next one. The ugly cousin of beer world, brown ales, over or underrated?
Underrated.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Love brown ales.
Okay, give a booster speech for brown ales. Why should people drink them?
Brown ales are, the way I make them, they're approachable. I make my brown ale around 5%. I like it because you have that malt backbone to it. It's also a beer we can play around with from a flavor perspective. We've done added some flavors to our brown ale to mix it up a little bit. But for me, it's not overly high in alcohol. Like maybe our stout's 8 to 9%. It's a 5% beer. It's got that malt backbone, and it's a bit, not to say refreshing, but it's easy to drink. It tastes really good.
I think people. And I was the exact same way growing up. Matt used to drink everything and I couldn't drink most of it. I couldn't do IPAs. I couldn't do stouts. And when we were younger, I was like, I just can't do it. But now as I progressed in age, my taste buds have changed and I've matured. But I also think people were like, oh, I'm not drinking dark beer. There's no way I can handle that. Again, I think it's another gateway to stout is they try a brown ale and they're like, oh, wait a minute, it's a little light on the coffee, it's a little malty, sweet. This is not as bitter or that charred coffee burnt malt flavor that we get out of some stouts. And yeah, I think they're really underrated. There's some great brown ales out there and they definitely need to be top of everybody's list. And we hear it quite a bit, like, oh man, it's so great that you guys have a brown ale. You guys, there's not many places that are doing brown ales in the Valley. And so keep it up. I'm like, all right, thanks for the feedback.
Have you guys tried the beer from the Beer Engine at South of Shaw? I think Dana claims it's the only one in the Central Valley. It's a big lever that pushes it through some kind of thimble-like device that aerates the beer. Have you guys tried that?
I have not.
Need to give it a whirl. It's just he has a giant lever right there next to the bar and he pulls it straight through. It's pretty amazing. Let's jump to the next one. Let's say you're at a convenience store somewhere in Kansas. There's no craft beer in sight. All you have is mass market beer and you're going to a barbecue. What's your 12 pack that you take with you?
Probably. I still love Pabst Blue Ribbon. I'll probably grab a 12 pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon PBR.
Okay. Dustin, what about you?
For me, I would probably go not quite as old school as Matt, but I would go to the gateway beer that got me was Blue Moon. A little of that crafty, and that's really what bought me in the butt to get craft beer going because it was Corona before that. And then so the Blue Moon, I think, still has a little piece in my heart.
Yeah, we all have our gateway. Mine was Anchor Steam because I lived in the Bay Area and I think it's gone out of business. And then I discovered Dogfish Head and then it was all over. All right, next one. Crowlers or growlers?
So we
that's
don't
a great question.
Yeah, that's a topic conversation today. We don't do crowlers, but we do growlers. We've done growlers for the past year since we've opened the tap room, and they've been successful. I was surprised that when we got them, I was like, I don't know if that we have, because we do cans as well. We do 16 ounce cans, and I wasn't sure if people were going to fill growlers as well. And it's something that we have a customer base for.
Okay. I was shocked. So when we opened the tap room, we didn't have any of the growlers. And so we had cans to go. And it seemed like after COVID, that was the mainstream beer portal for to-go beer was 16-ounce cans. It used to be those 22-ounce bomber bottles. And so after COVID, it was cans. So we had cans to go, but we kept getting a lot of requests for growlers. And I thought to myself, like, I thought growlers were dead. Like, why would you come in and get a beer off the tap when you can get cans to go and maybe there's less oxidation, this or that? And we actually ended up buying some growlers and yeah, they're gone. And so we just did a reorder, but I was surprised
awesome.
To hear that.
Yeah. The next one, Slurpee beers.
We haven't delved into that. You're talking about the frozen style?
Yeah. I go back to Alex because he has such assertive opinions about everything. He just denies their existence in some ways. It's not a beer. It's a Slurpee. It's not a beer. But if kind of like seltzers, if you bring someone with you that doesn't want a straightforward whatever. Let's go on to the next one. Clovis Farmers Market. I have a lot of listeners in Fresno. Is Clovis Farmers Market underrated or overrated?
I think it's underrated. We try to go and support the local farmers. It's great produce. The drawback is sometimes it's super, super hot when it's going
so hot. But I think those pole vaulters are going to hit the sun and they'll just explode.
In my opinion, I think it's underrated because I think it is great to see people out and about. That's great to see people supporting local small businesses, and the local economy in Fresno County is so vast of ag that when you get it at that, sometimes it's small farms like us. We're a small brewery. So when we can pay it forward to some of the smaller farmers, it comes back in return.
Okay. Next one. What's your favorite non-Fresno or Clovis brewery? Who do you look to and you say, oh, I aspire to that. I love their beer. Who's your North Star outside of Fresno?
If I'm going down to the liquor store, if I want something different from our offerings, I'm always reaching for Russian River. Their stuff is always top notch. I know what I'm getting every single time. They make some beers that I really enjoy. I'm a huge fan of Simcoe. I like to use Simcoe in my West Coast. So they have a beer called Road to Hill 56. It's a pale ale. Love that beer. It's homage to Simcoe hops. And so, yeah, for me, it's usually Russian River. Second to that would be Firestone Walker.
Yeah.
And that's where if I can find Pivo Pills, either in cans or on draft, it's usually what I'm reaching for ordering.
Mine, like Matt, is Firestone. And then my other go-to that is truly craft is Belching Beaver out of Southern California, San Diego area. They just do a lot of good beers, and it's just like a great atmosphere when you go to their breweries and their pubs. And so that's mine.
Okay. A couple either ors. Pilsner or Hef?
Pilsner.
For sure, Pilsner.
Okay. Explain. Why should I not care about Hefs?
I think Hefs are good, but Pilsner is just more crushable. You're not getting that clove character, any banana. I don't necessarily hate it, but I'm definitely reaching for a Pilsner over a Hefeweizen.
Yeah, I think the Hef for me is the clovey character, the esters that come from that yeast make it a little bit more difficult for me to enjoy. So for me, it's Pilsner all the way.
Okay. Sours or stouts?
Stouts.
Okay. You guys are aligned. Okay. So
why stouts?
I like the fullness of a stout. I like that the stout can be a 5% stout. It can be a 12% stout. There's a lot of range there. Sours can be that way as well, but I don't necessarily, if I'm looking at a board and I got a choice between a sour and a stout, I'm going to go for a stout.
I don't feel that I can have more than a couple sours. I've tried to get into that, but like that Sour Patch Kid where it gets you right back here and the acidity is just rough for me. And so we do want to make one because it is a cool chemistry process in order to make a sour. So we do want to do that at one point because I think it does test your abilities to keep within the pH brewing. But for me, it's definitely got to be a stout.
Okay, let's jump into some business questions. And we're going to start by talking about tap rooms. How do you create a tap room culture? If you go into breweries, you'll see an array of cultures in tap rooms. There's one brewery, and I'm not going to say who it was, but I walked in and one of the brewers was sitting at the counter without a shirt on, eating Chinese food at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And that wasn't actually a detraction for me. That was an enticement. Now I'm excited.
Was that you? No, I think for me, Matt does everything on the brew house side, and I do a lot of the tap room customer service ish, but it's a team effort. But I think for me, it's having a place like Burning Sun for us, the name, right? Being outside, bringing the sunlight in for us. So try to have an environment that feels warm in the wintertime, but bright and cool in the summer. But having a place where you have some music, you have a lot of conversations, whether it's Matt and I conversating with some of our frequent guests. We've built relationships over the last year of being at the tap room, some that you never even thought of, and some that were like right around the corner neighbors. And I had no idea that we lived this close together, but they come to the brewery and next thing you have a new friend. And I think for me, it's culture of being part of the community, giving back where you can, but also being present and being relevant. And I think for us, we strive to give that back. And then also, I really feel strongly about quality over quantity. And so making sure that what we serve is top notch. We did pour West Coast down the drain. It was a little disheartening. It happens. But we would rather take the hit and know that we had a little snafu and things happen, but we don't want to just throw it out there just to try to get it out there. Because sometimes you only have one opportunity to bring people in. And if that first opportunity, they try a beer that's funky, they're going to be like, yeah, we're not going back. And for us, we want to make sure that experience is top notch every time.
Okay. What does a good tap room sound like? I've been to breweries that are loud as hell and you're shouting at each other. I've been to places that resemble English pubs where I feel like I'm tiptoeing around the place. What should it sound like?
I think that is. It's funny that balance between the two, because everybody's going to experience things differently. But yeah, we try to have music in the background, but not terribly loud. But we want conversation to happen too. So it's, you know, we have televisions in our tap room. I know some breweries don't do televisions, but I think it's something that if people are coming by themselves and they want to watch the game, then we want to be able to offer that to them. But it's a combination of, again, conversation, background music, television. It depends what's going on, what we're trying to promote at the time. But those are the three things we're trying to balance and make sure it's a comfortable environment.
Let's say you're training a new beer pourer who maybe was like a bartender at a traditional bar. What would you describe to them as the biggest difference between working in those two different type of environments? What do you want them? What's their role ideally to look like for you guys?
That's perfect timing. For us, looking at a bar or a fast-paced brewery, we're not that. We really focus on customer service. Not that the other ones don't, but sometimes if it's so fast-paced and you're just pouring beer after beer or drink after drink, you don't get that opportunity to have those conversations and build those relationships. And so I think for me and my input on trying to mentor a new employee is to, and I wish I would have had this 25 years ago in my career, of knowing how relationships are so beneficial for life, and trying to instill that of, you never know who is going to be across from you and you never know who they know. And so always being that personable, professional, upfront, honest. And if you make a mistake, you make a mistake. But getting the new employee to understand that their relationships are key, because you never know when it's going to come around to either help you or bite you in the butt.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the brewery scene in Clovis. We talked about brewery districts with some of my Fresno folks, but Clovis has a different kind of layout. It's a little bit more distributed. And I know there's the trail. I know that exists. But how, if you were at like a beer convention and someone was like, describe the Clovis beer scene, how would you describe it to them?
That's a good question. That's a great, I was hoping Matt was going to talk a little bit.
Yeah, I would say it's interesting how Fresno, Clovis, is that the breweries have established themselves. So you got downtown Fresno. There's four or five of them down there, and they're close, but they're not all within walking distance of each other, which is similar to here in Clovis. A lot of us are right along the trail, like Incinerati is just off the trail, a block or two. But a lot of us, if you go down the trail, you're gonna run into us. You're gonna run into Summer Fox. You're gonna run into Machine Head or Crow and Wool. So yes, we're stretched out a little bit, but I think they're all can be accessed fairly easily. But I think it's underdeveloped too. For as many people that live in the area, I think that there's a tremendous opportunity for breweries to come in and that are dedicated to their process and making quality products to be successful.
I think it helps build camaraderie amongst the breweries, especially in Clovis. They are plentiful of them. But you got Reborns get ready to open. You got House of Pendragon just up the street. And I think that it creates a destination. At first, I was like, oh, man, there's more competition. But at the end of the day, it's not competition. It's bringing people together and making a destination for a day to go brewery hop. And that's one of the first things that I do when we go out of town is I pull up Google, put a brewery, what's near me. And so I think that if we can continue to all work together, because we could all get the same exact recipe of beer and hand it to one another, every beer will come out slightly different just based off of several characteristics, whether the brewer, the water profile, the equipment. And so I think that's what makes the brewery industry super fun is you have that ability to work together. If you need a sack of grain, you can call one of our neighbor breweries and go, hey, I'm short a sack of two row. Can we get one from you and spot you on the next order? And they all do that. And so I think bringing everybody together and having that commonality of the trail or the small town feel of Clovis, it makes it more of a destination for the breweries seen in Clovis.
What kind of brewery does Clovis not have? And I say that kind of in the sense of you go to San Diego, they've got every type of brewery for every type of person. Right. There are places that don't have a lot. We're somewhere in the middle where we have some things, but we're clearly not as developed as bigger cities. So what are we missing, do you think?
Talking about just from a beer recipe, like a style of beer.
It could be that. So I'll give you two examples. There were two breweries I loved to go to. I moved here from Southern California. One of them was called The Brewery, and right. It was a sour focused brewery. I loved to go in there and get a flight of the craziest shit they could serve me. It was always wild and interesting. I usually liked about 30% of it, but it was a lot of fun just to go do it. Another brewery that I would go to regularly is Golden Road. Golden Road had an amazing outdoor space for kids. They had shuffleboard. They had all sorts of stuff. And then they had great food that they would bring right out to you. And so I had this really cool kind of mixed space family environment. So those are two examples. One is like beer related. One is environment. But like we don't have everything. So what are we missing?
Yeah, so I would mention that too. Barrel aged programs. You don't see a lot of that here in Clovis yet. I know Crow's done some barrel aged, and that's about it. Summer Fox has done some barrel aged stuff, but it's not a big program like the brewery is. The other one that you don't see out here that I think there's an opportunity for, I've been asked for, and with a little bit of distro, is Belgian beers. A lot of us are making Belgian style beers. I see one off here and there, but I don't think any of us are truly dedicated to making those styles. Whether they say thinking of like Saison style beers or the quads or triples, I think that's an opportunity. That's on my list. It's on my list of beers to make here in the future.
Yeah. One of my peak beer moment, this is the highlight of my beer drinking life, was my wife and I went to Bruges for a vacation in Belgium, and we found a castle that was serving beer in the basement of the castle, and they had 250 things on tap. Oh, 250. Wow. And so I ended up sitting there for 4 hours, naturally. But yeah, I would love a kind of a Belgian forward brewery. Let me ask about our favorite thing, regulation and politics. What can the city of Clovis do to make the process for you guys simpler?
This is going to sound really bizarre. We didn't have any issues.
Really? Okay. So smooth for you guys.
Yeah. And it's so weird to me, and I'm thankful for it. But I feel like even when we had our old place down the way, I think I was a little overzealous and anal about the paperwork. And so like with the Clovis, we call the city, we do that. We call ABC. I filled out every single form on ABC's website, probably about a quarter of them we didn't need, but I had everything signed and ready to go. But again, for me, the Clovis, I didn't have any issues. One thing that I do hope that we can start to work on is the new legislation that passed in January, is the entertainment zones. And I'm curious to see how that works with the local police and city council, but they need to create an ordinance that would allow public spaces that would allow open containers. And so what that could mean for us is you could walk out our front door on the sidewalk and then maybe walk around to the corner on our little alleyway and maybe have a little outdoor space. We understand that the outdoor space in Fresno is tough with the weather, but we do have some amazing spring and fall days that would be completely conducive to that. And so I'm curious to see how that is in the future, but that legislation is so new that we haven't quite got there to approach it. But for us, we didn't have any issues with any of that stuff.
And I think it's things falling into place for us. When we moved into this building, it wasn't an existing brewery. So from the city's perspective, they weren't looking at this building saying we need to rezone this, or we need to go through a lot of a process around a conditional use permit and those types of things. So it worked out well for us at the time to be able to take over an existing brewery that already had some infrastructure in place and was already built out for the purpose of what we're using it for.
Are you guys optimistic about craft beer caves? There used to be a lot of them. I don't see as many of them anymore. Some convenience stores are moving away from it, it seems like. What are your guys' thoughts on the state of buying craft beer at other places?
I think there's still places that really dedicate themselves to serving good craft beer. I think there's just, even with the limited amount of local craft breweries between Fresno and Clovis, we do have an influx still of beer that comes in from the Bay Area, from Sacramento, from Southern California, from through distribution. I think back in the day when it was just Coors and Budweiser distributing beer, and they'd have their own craft brands that they would promote as well. But now we have some niche distributors out there that specifically focus on craft beer. I think there's still quite a few stores and places to purchase beer, whether maybe not as much local, but from outside the area, that's regional craft beer.
Can you guys give me 1 second?
Yeah.
Nothing now. Yeah, that Pilsner, it's coming around.
It tastes Pilsner.
It does. I think it probably tastes fine, but I want it to drop a little bit clearer before I put it in cans.
People were knocking on it.
I just added another round of Nalco, so we'll see what it looks like after the week.
Okay, what's the benefit of breweries working together?
Collaboration is important. I think that whether like Dustin mentioned, if I need a sack of grain, I can call up Alex and say, hey, I need a sack of grain. Can you offer it to me? He's like, yeah, no problem. It can come to business as well. Through the guild, we talk about business related items. It can come down to process, sharing process of how we CIP tanks, how we add fining to tanks, how our breweries flow from the mash tun to the boil kettle to the fermenters. I think there's a lot of information there that we can share with each other. And it's not always consistent, but whenever we need to reach out, I know there's members of this community that will always be there to answer questions, or vice versa, if they need questions answered.
Yeah, I think it's huge. The Brewers Guild is a nonprofit in the Valley that kind of has all 23 members currently. We all communicate, collaborate, and you never know. Like I said, it goes back to relationships. And there's times where you can call and say, hey, how did you guys go through this process? And it can be as simple as, oh, you just got to do this and this. And there's no checklist for opening and operating a brewery. And so that's one of the things that I found, is just having the ability to call and go, hey, how did you guys navigate this? Oh, and then it just comes together. So I think having that camaraderie, having the collaborations when the breweries work together and do certain beers so they can cross promote and bring certain skill sets together, I think is another great mechanism, because it shows the cooperation and the collaboration of how everybody works together. We're always better together than we are separate. And so once we start siloing ourselves and becoming individuals, we've lost what craft beer is, because really I feel like craft beer is bringing everybody together and having a good time. And it's cool when you start getting some of the other breweries together, the amount of interaction, it's cool to see.
Okay, let's do crystal ball stuff or projections. So if you were to close your eyes and imagine where Burning Sun could and would be 5 years from now for you, what are your ambitions? What do you hope for it?
I think 5 years from now, I would hope to outgrow the space we're in, scale up a bit bigger. I struggle with that, because within craft industry, you have the options of opening more tap rooms or doing more distro, buying a huge canning line, some big tanks, and pushing a lot of beer onto the market.
And we see both at work right now in the Fresno brewery scene. We see both those approaches.
I've been a part of those types of businesses that have been and done that. So I think it's, from our perspective, what I would like to see in 5 years is that this business is sustaining itself, that craft has turned a corner and come back again. I think through quality and building community, it will do that. But I think, from my perspective, I think building a team in 5 years, have brewers that are proud to be brewing and for Burning Sun, to have a group of beer tenders that are proud to pour beers for Burning Sun, that would be a success metric for me 5 years from now.
What about you, Dustin?
I think just being able to give back to the community and being community focused and being able to produce great products that people locally are proud of the space that we're in now, we have the opportunity to grow. But one of the things that I always felt about the craft beer thing, and it was one of the things you said, I didn't answer it a couple questions ago about what are we missing? One of the biggest places that I really enjoy to visit is Barrel House in Paso. The outdoor area that they have, even though it gets 106 degrees there, it cools off. They have ways to make it enjoyable during the day. And I feel like if we had the ability to have a brewery that is out in the Clovis area that gave you that outdoor space. There's another area that I've been to called Yeehaw Brewing in Nashville. They are co-located with a moonshine vendor, but they have a beautiful venue of games. There's couches and it's just massive. And so it's just not that I want to be that big. What I'm getting at is I just like the destinational experience for people to have a good time. And if you can have a good time with some good beers and some good people, that's really what my hope is.
Yeah, absolutely. We always close these podcasts in the same place with book recommendations. I know I'm springing this on you guys. So if you don't have anything handy, that's cool too. But if you do have any handy, I've gotten an array of interesting like beer science books. I've gotten a lot of Star Wars from Alex. Is there anything that comes to mind for either of you?
I think the book that all brewers should start with is How to Brew by John Palmer. That's always the first one to go to. There's the new IPA is a great book as well. But yeah, I would start with the basics. How to Brew by John Palmer would be my pick.
Okay.
I Live and Die by Matt's Decisions on the Brew House and the reading the books of How to Brew. When you saw that question, I'm like, oh, I haven't read a book in ages.
Is there any business books that are important for you, Dustin? Is thinking front of house stuff. Is there any books or like kind of those efficiency books, that kind of genre I'm talking about?
Yeah,
those books can be really helpful for people in guiding how they think about things.
Yeah, there's a book. We have it, and I've read it twice, actually. And it's basically it's brewery operations.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes through everything. It goes from the beer side of cleaning your beer lines. That's a must. You have to do that either weekly or biweekly. But the spreadsheets on incoming, outgoing, payroll, quality control. And so when you start, that goes back to your first question, like how do you go from a hobby to a business? That was a good book and it really helped at least get the foundational started, but it was so good that I had to read it again because there is so much to know and things do evolve every year. And so, yeah, that would be my book of choice would be the brewery operations.
Fantastic. What's going on at Burning Sun these days? What are your hours, location? You got events on the horizon that we should know about?
Yeah, we are located on the corner of Railroad and Barstow, but bigger cross streets are Clovis and Barstow. Railroad's the front of the street right on Clovis Avenue. So if you come to Railroad, you'll see our address at 1131 Railroad Avenue. We are open Wednesday through Sunday. During the week, we open at 4. And during the week, Saturday, Sundays, we open at noon. And what we have going on is we have food 5 days a week. We just partnered with a local food truck, Leo's Tacos, but it's tacos and more. It's tri-tip sandwiches, burgers. He is going to start maybe some different menu items for some pub. And one of the things I asked him for was maybe like utilize our brown ale or our IPA and make some sort of a beer cheese, you know, to go with the pretzels. But no, so we have trivia every Thursday. We're like currently just started a trivia tournament. We're going to go the next 6 weeks, kind of like a March Madness. And then at the end of that, you can win a personalized trivia for you and your friends at the brewery. And we have a collab with old school Clovis Brewery, Zone 9. I don't know if you remember them.
I do remember them. Zone 9 did.
Yeah.
So they had I forget the name of that. I would go there for some kind of hazy thing a while ago. Yes, I remember the Foggy Melon for sure.
We have Return of the Fog coming.
Yeah. Oh, really?
We did a collab with them, and it's coming out very soon. So March 21st of this year, and our plan is to have...
I was so pissed when there was no more Foggy Melon. I would complain about it all the time. I'm just thinking about that Foggy Melon.
March 21st, by the time you air this, it's going to be probably hopefully about a week before or the week of. And that'd be a great plug for that event. We're going to have Hagman Barbecue Joint working with us, creating an excellent spread. And so, yeah, that's been super fun. We're really looking forward to it. Tasting it in the tank. There's some amazing aromas coming off that hazy. And I think everyone's going to be very impressed. And it may become a new feature here. So we're looking at April 5th to be our 3-year anniversary party. And like I said, we've been a brewery for that long. And so trying to bring people together, it's going to be spring weather. And so as we continue to do the upswing of the festival season, we will be participating at the Chaffee Zoo, the Zoo Brew, I think is what it's called, the Shaver Lake. Oh, yeah, Roaring Fork, good one. The Shaver Lake. But we're also participating with Brew U. I think you have heard about Brew U. Matt and I went to that program at Fresno State. It's a great opportunity, whether you're a beer tender or just a local person with beer enthusiasm and want to learn more about beer and the craft scene. You can look up Brew U at the Fresno State, but I think we're hosting one of their tours. And then the other thing we have coming up in the next several weeks with all the breweries in Clovis and the Backyard Social Club is we do Pedals and Pints. We are doing that on the last Sunday of the month, starting in March, April, May, so we can beat the heat. But it just brings out a family environment to ride the bike up the trail. So each time we do it, we do a different starting and an ending point. And that way we can spread the businesses opportunities through all of the breweries throughout the trail. And so it makes it a fun time. A lot of the breweries put together gift packages. And then if you make it through all of the places and you get a stamp from all participating venues, you'll get a gift basket at the end of the drawing. So it's a good event. The last Sunday of the month for the next 3 months before summertime comes. But we're always envisioning new things, trying new things. We have a board of ideas of brews to come, try to make beers that people request some different things, or some of them even throw out names all the time. Because naming a beer is not easy. And so no. Sometimes we have a couple patrons who come in and they throw out ideas, and next thing you know, they see it up there. It builds that community for us. And then they come in and they go, oh my gosh, you actually listen to what I'm saying. Yeah, that's kind of what's going on in the next couple months for us. But we have a lot of good stuff planned with I'm really excited about the Zone 9 thing. I think that really is going to be a good adventure and bring people back together again, because they got the hit with the COVID.
Yeah.
And it's just tough. And so it's cool. A lot of them come in here. They go to other breweries.
They're still very passionate about craft beer. So it's fun to talk beer with them and brew with them when we do our collab. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, that has made my day, the return of the fog. I'm so glad to hear it. Matt, Dustin, this has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to come out and hang out and drink some beers. And I wish you guys all the luck. It sounds like there's a lot of events on the horizon. And so there's a lot of exciting reasons to be out in Clovis drinking beer.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan.
All right, thanks, Jordan.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.